with bated breath, not, for the results to come in from the D.C., the Maryland, and the Virginia primaries, which we will dutifully try to talk about only tangentially, if at all, because there's other stuff that matters and other stuff that's funnier and other stuff that's sadder and other stuff that is vastly more meaningful than primary season kabuki theater. Like, for instance, the crap weasels of the Democratic Party who inhabit the United States Senate. One of those crap weasels is a man by the name of John D. Rockefeller IV. We call him Jay here in West Virginia. Big fan of mountaintop removal. Big fan of ethnic cleansing in southern West Virginia via mountaintop removal. And big fan, apparently, because he's a big beneficiary of telecoms. Yay, Jay! Yeah, you know what happened today. You know that the attempt to stop telecom immunity failed in the Senate today. You know that people like Jay Rockefeller and Bill Nelson and Ben Nelson, Blanche Lincoln, Mary Landrieu, and various and sundry other weaselistic Democrats in the Senate caved in, took their marching orders from the telecoms, of course, who gave them horse-gagging wads of money to do so. Harry Reid was one of them, took horse-gagging wads of money from Verizon. So did Jay Rockefeller. And you know what? If you got enough money, you can buy you a politician. You know, the other night I said that I thought that West Virginia's delegation in the Congress, every time they stood up to speak, ought to be forced to say, "Brought to you by Big Coal," just like the cabinet member in Idiocracy periodically said, "Brought to you by Carl's Jr." Not Jay. I mean, Jay is brought to us by Big Coal, but I think Jay needs to stand up and say, "Brought to you by Verizon. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now, Jay? You..." Nice, Bob. Be nice. "Can you hear me, Jay? I called your office earlier today." Uh-huh. "And I'll say it now. I don't have to vote for your opponent. But that does not mean that I have to, by definition, vote for you." Now, I realize that I'm seeming rather two-minded and wishy-washy on this. I think I've just been herded back into the primary process. And I said this would be only tangential if we talked about primaries at all, and I consider this tangential. I'm back in the primary process because I've got work to do. I had thought that I would stay out of the presidential primary process mainly so that I could watch the two-year-olds who support Obama and Clinton fight it out and then do my duty as a mature, upstanding member of the Democratic Party and vote for the Democratic nominee in November. I think I may have just been, as I said, pushed back into the primary process. I need to go so I can not vote for Jay Rockefeller to be renominated. And I also need to go so that I can, yes, 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 I know, excuse me, so that I can cast a primary ballot for Barack Obama. There's a lot wrong with Barack Obama. There is a lot wrong with Hillary Clinton. There is a lot wrong with any politician who is able to raise the money to run for high public office in this country. The ability to raise that money indicates, I think, probably some level of character flaw. Some level of ability to sort of put the shine on for anybody who's within paying distance so that you can get their money. It's probably the same character flaw that inhabits the soul of a televangelist. I acknowledge all that. But today, when it was time to vote either for corporate telecoms or for the Constitution of the United States, and particularly the free exercise of the Fourth Amendment by the people of the United States, the McCain-Turian candidate voted with the telecoms, just as many Democrats did, including Jay Rockefeller. Barack Obama, for reasons that I don't know, but you know, at this point I'm just pleased that he did, voted against telecom immunity. Hillary Clinton didn't even show up. Oh, I know, she's busy, she's running a campaign, she's got things to be and places to do, but she couldn't show up. I mean, the only primaries that were really on the radar today were Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. Pretty close to D.C., D.C., and Maryland, and Virginia. But she couldn't be bothered to show up and vote for the Constitution of the United States. That's a deal breaker for me. Habeas corpus is a deal breaker for me. Wiretapping, spying, deal breakers. And so, for whatever reason motivated him, Barack Obama voted, in my estimation, the right way on the bill. Or the amendment, I suppose I should say. And I can reward him with my vote for doing the right thing. And now, I don't know what kind of excuse will be put forward. My dog ate the bill. Bill ate the bill. Couldn't find the Senate today. Temporary amnesia. I was busy in the farthest southwest corner of Virginia, stumping for votes. I was out across the Chesapeake Bay in Maryland stumping for votes. This was important. And yeah, had she voted against it, it would have only been 32. But still, there are times we fight the fight, not because we expect to win, but because if we do not fight the fight, we lose our self-respect. That being the case, I deem that, and you know what, this is my right as a voter. Your right to, your right to disagree with me if you choose. But this is my right as a voter to make judgments based upon issues. Now, I may in fact think that Senator Clinton has a far better taste in shoes than Senator Obama. I may think that she's better on health care than Senator Obama. I may think that she's better on children's issues than Senator Obama. But showing up is half the battle. I had actually begun thinking I might back away, and if I didn't, you know, either stay out of the primary or possibly even vote for Senator Clinton. I entertained both sides because, again, my candidates are out of the running. But dadgum, be right or be wrong, but for God's sakes, show up. I would that ye were hot or cold, but ye are neither. Ye are lukewarm, and I spit ye out of my mouth. Isn't that how the thing in Revelations goes? No, I'm not using the Bible to determine my voting preferences, but I do understand the meaning behind that particular verse. Stand for something. Don't just stand there. Do something. Don't tell us how good you're gonna be. Go be good. For me, the telecom issue is not largely a Hillary versus Barack issue. I am using it as a benchmark. I may yet stay out of the primaries. I don't know. I'm using it as a benchmark, but the greater benchmark, the larger benchmark, is the glaring need that this points up to get Harry Reid the hell out of the Senate Majority Leader's chair. He is pusillanimous, he is ineffective, he is pathetic, gutless, bought and paid for, and he's got to go. And I don't know how we get that message across. Get a few thousand people standing outside the Capitol with signs and pitchforks and torches screaming, "Quit, Harry, quit." I don't know. But you know what? This was an easy issue. And I'll tell you a secret. Right now, anything that George Bush advocates is an easy issue because the man could not do the right thing if the two choices he had were both right. He would do nothing and screw up. Telecoms spying on behalf of the federal government on American citizens is an easy issue. And the only way that that issue even possibly becomes difficult is if you've just gotten a big old honking check from Verizon or AT&T. Communication sponsor of the Democratic National Convention, might I add. AT&T. That's the only way it's a tough call. Is if you've been bought. If you puckered up and given the big old kiss. Kiss the telecom ring, Jay. Kiss the telecom ring, Harry. Why don't you let us at least see you do it? Doing it in the shadows doesn't make it any less real. I don't mean to sound jealous or anything, but sometimes I really do wish that I was on terrestrial radio. Mostly I don't. This is one of those moments because I'd like to be on terrestrial radio, and I would like to hear people, have people across West Virginia hear me say, you do not have to vote for Jay Rockefeller's opposition, but you do not have to vote for Jay Rockefeller. I'm done. Can you imagine, and now this is not wallowing or anything, but I was raised up believing, I was raised up being taught, not believing, screw believing. I was raised up being taught that exercising one's right to vote was about the most sacred obligation that one had as a citizen of one's county, city, county, state, and nation. When my father was barely able to walk for very far, the one place he made sure he went to was the polls to cast his vote. And now I look at the slate presented to me by the primary in my state. Let's see. Not gonna vote for the Senate. I'm not gonna vote for my congressman. Not gonna vote against him because the people against him are just, you know, crazy. Because we breed the sort of right-wing Republican in this state that thinks that Mike Huckabee is a good idea. You know, woohoo! Oh, Margaret. Kind of makes you wonder where the repig licking, right wing, knuckle walking, mouth breathing, dead from the neck up, repig licking party in West Virginia is these days.
What are you people? On dope?
So I'm not going to vote for any of their candidates. I'll just not vote for any of the ones that the Democrats have handed me. Any of the crap weasels. I will not vote for a man who hustles liquid coal. I won't vote for a man who thinks that the telecom corporations are more important than the constitutional rights for which my family over the course of generations has fought and died. I won't vote for a governor, an incumbent governor, who, well, who's broken our workers' compensation system, who has done nothing to alleviate the depredations of the coal companies and mountaintop removal. No, so that's governor, senator, congressman. Don't have any vote, anybody to vote for in the House of Delegates or state Senate races that mean anything to me. At this point in time, the only reason for me to go and vote in the primary is to cast a vote for Barack Obama for actually showing up and doing the right thing, not by me, not by those generations I mentioned, but by the Constitution of the United States. Otherwise, it's stay home till November. Right? But like I said, the primaries are tangential. They're tangential to the gutless wonders in the United States Senate who get elected as Democrats and then don't have the spine to be Democrats. The lamest lame duck in the history of the White House is flapping away at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and the Senate won't even stand up to him. I'm guessing there's just not a lot of members of the Senate who ever read that lecture, that statement, that little monologue by Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird about sometimes we do what we have to do and we fight the fights we fight simply not because they have to be fought, because otherwise we couldn't live with ourselves. I don't know. I don't know how Ben Nelson from Nebraska lives with himself, or that Landrieu woman, or that Lincoln woman, or that Pryor man. I don't know. I don't know how Jay Rockefeller lives with himself, except to say that, you know, when you got a lot of bread, you can still eat a lot of crap between the slices. And God knows he's got the bread, so to speak. Oh, dear, I'm off on one of my negative little tears this evening, aren't I? I apologize. But that's the America we live in. Closed the program last night with Langston Hughes's Let America Be America Again, and of course the subtext being that America has never existed. And it's when you see things like a servile Senate led by a servile, bought off, paid for, bribed up senator from Nevada taking a big old pee on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, you realize that if it's left up to them, America never will be America again. And I'm getting to a very frustrated part and point in my life vis-a-vis American politics. I used to say I understand that I'm not going to agree with these people all the time. But if they do the job most of the time, we can be friends. I'm getting very close to abandoning that notion. If you cannot do the job that you are paid very well to do, then, well, what have we in common? Getting it right most of the time doesn't count when the times that you get it wrong are on monstrously huge issues of terrific importance to the future of the constitutional rights that we hold dear, those of us who still hold our constitutional rights dear and aren't sucked up inside the television. What'd you say, Madge? We lost our Fourth Amendment rights today? Wasn't using them. Hey, where's the clicker? So you know what? I'm not going to tell you what to do, but if you feel like I do, maybe you want to, maybe you'll do what I did and tell your senator's office who voted in favor of the telecoms and against the people of the United States that you're done with them. I told the guy, I said, look, I'm a registered Democrat. I've never voted for a Republican in my life, ever. But I'm done with Senator Rockefeller. I will never cast my vote for him again so long as I live, and I'll see to it at the very least that my family doesn't either. Because I do not wish to associate myself or my vote with a man who does not have the nerve or the stomach for a fight to stand up for the very thing that makes us who we are and for which so much blood, so many lives, so many countless hours of thankless toil, so much has been lost and so much has been shed and so much has been given. If you can't vote in favor of the Constitution and against the telecoms, you have no business thinking that somebody who does love this country and does love this Constitution will vote for you. This is all very personal, and I apologize. So if it's not where you want me to be right now, but the fact of the matter is, it is where I am. Headline, Dems fall well short of stripping immunity from spy bill. Spy bill. A bill to permit spying on American citizens. I don't know if it's cognitive dissonance, or maybe I'm catching the flu that Ferg and Doodle have, but I don't understand the necessity to spy on sovereign citizens of the United States. Benjamin Franklin said that when a man left public office, he should consider and went back to just being an ordinary citizen, that he should consider it a promotion because he had gone from being a servant to being the boss. It's just not that way anymore, is it? Now, on the upside, let's note that the House bill, the spy bill, does not contain telecom immunity. That means it will have to be reconciled in conference committee. If we had a Speaker of the House, you might think that maybe the House of Representatives, the so-called People's House, the lower house, you might think that they would stand up for the Constitution and for your rights and my rights. You would, I suspect, be wrong. Because I fully expect in that conference committee, with that telecom immunity, with the threat of a veto from a lame duck hanging over their heads, I expect Nancy Pelosi to collapse like a souffle at a tap dance. That hope does, however, spring eternal. One does not know who the House conferees will be, or at least I don't. Maybe you do. Is it worth our effort to try to find out who those people are and start leaning on them and telling them under no uncertain terms that it's time for once that they honor their oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic? Because at this point, the United States Senate sort of appears to be a domestic enemy of the Constitution. Because if you're assaulting the rights contained therein, you're certainly not a friend of it. Now, are you? Maybe it's just me. 26 minutes past the hour, and to the phones we go. Who have I got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan.
I'm glad my father's not alive.
Yeah.
He dove into burning oil off an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because his aircraft carrier had been torpedoed by the Japanese. He was fighting for his country.
Yeah, I know, I know.
It would be... He would figure, it wasn't really worth it. Now, I do have one answer and a question.
Just out of curiosity, which carrier?
The Wasp.
Okay.
CV-7.
Yeah.
You asked how these people sleep at night. It's simple. They're all whores at heart.
Nah, see, I think that's being too rough on the whores. Prostitutes have consciences. These people don't.
I'm talking about moral whores. I'm not talking about the kind who actually have to sell themselves to survive.
I know. That's what I'm saying. They are lower than that.
The people who have to sell themselves sexually to survive are just trying to survive. Moral whores are the kind who will do anything just to get more. They want more.
And I think if we had horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner handy, he would tell us that maybe the word we're looking for there is sociopath.
Yeah, probably. I do have a question.
Rhetorical or?
No, actually, a real life question. Of the people in the audience in Nevada, is anyone showing up to be a primary challenger to Reed that we can send money to?
Isn't the Nevada caucus over? I mean, was it just presidential? I don't know. That's a straight. But no, I don't think. No, he doesn't. No, he's got to be replaced inside the Senate.
Best way to replace him is make sure he doesn't get elected.
No, that ain't gonna happen. The only way you lose. Look, do you think if he was defeated in the primary, he wouldn't go all Lieberman and create the Nevada for Reed party?
Oh, yeah, you get a point.
I remember a long time ago when the Soviet Union still existed, Susan, and there was a study done, a statistical study, that showed that it was easier to unseat a member of the Soviet Politburo than it was to unseat a sitting senator.
You do have a point.
That hasn't changed.
This country is looking more and more and more like the Soviet Union every day.
By the way, Jim Webb voted for this, too.
I'm ashamed of that man. He should know better.
What do you want of a former Republican? He was a Secretary of the Navy under Ronald Reagan. I saw a thing over on Democratic Underground today saying, did I just shake hands with the next vice president of the United States? I shook hands with Jim Webb.
God, I hope not. Not if he's voting against the Fourth Amendment.
Well, he did. By the way, issues, not a single Republican got out of line.
Oh, of course not. They're robots.
And Senator Christopher Bond, who is the ranking repig on the Senate Intelligence Committee, said passage of the amendment would have allowed lawsuits to go forward and disclose our most vital means of collecting information and tracking terrorists.
Oh, horse pucky.
Be afraid, America. Be very afraid. If we can't spy on you and get Aunt Edna's fudge recipe, the terrorists win.
God, these people just make me ill. And it's our own people that I'm talking about.
And I guess it's because we tend to judge them by our own standards, isn't it, Susan?
Yeah. I expect...
Would you... If you... Now, wait a minute. Okay, and I do the same thing with myself, so I'm not asking you to do anything that I haven't already done myself. Imagine you're a member of the United States Senate, and you find out that somebody's just, that a telecom has just given you $50,000 for your reelection effort. Would you have the guts to vote for the Constitution of the United States?
I damn well better, or I don't belong in that Senate.
It's kind of the way I feel.
If you don't have the character to vote against it, you don't belong there. And if you can't, you'd be bothered to show up.
Now, yeah, and I realize this could be a moment where I'm being very, very unfair to Senator Clinton. Maybe she had the same flu that has laid some of us low lately. Kind of hard to crawl out of bed when you're burning up with fever and you got the shakes and the aches and the chills and feels like when you move
anything
every bone in your body's
burning. Anything short of bubonic plague, you should show up. It's for the Constitution. She took an oath.
You know, if the primary today was California or Minnesota or Washington or Florida, and you needed to be down there campaigning, I could deal. But no,
she'd be down there.
No, what I'm getting at is, the primaries today were Virginia, Maryland, and D.C.
Yeah, it's not like she couldn't whip on over briefly, cast her vote, whip on back.
I always find myself trying to make excuses for these people. And I'm thinking, well, maybe there's another amendment up. Maybe Chris Dodd's out there and he's outflanked them and he's got them right where he wants them right now.
Well, Chris can only do so much. Chris can try all... You know,
he did not filibustered. He hasn't filibustered.
He hasn't?
He promised really? He would. He hasn't.
Why hasn't he?
Beats the hell out of me, Susan. I mean, I'm not being an ass. I don't know.
I don't know either. I would have thought he'd filibuster it.
He voted against it.
Well, whoop-de-do.
But it made it obviously made it to a vote now, didn't it?
Yeah, but at least he...
Well, wait. Maybe I've got this backwards. Doggone it, Mark Levine's already gone from the chat room. This was an amendment that would have stripped immunity. So I guess he couldn't filibuster something that he wanted to see happen.
You lost me.
This wasn't an amendment to give immunity. This was an amendment to strip immunity from the bill, the FISA bill.
Oh, okay.
So maybe he filibusters later. I'm sorry. Sometimes I have to process on the fly.
Yeah. Well, I know. I can understand that. But
still,
it was
whatever to 31. 69 to 31, 60, 68 to 31, 66 to 31.
And this bill should have never reached the floor of the Senate. I agree with you there. Damn you, Reed.
Because, you see, he's the one that's orchestrating all of this.
Yeah.
None of this happens. Nothing happens without his tacit approval. He is the majority leader.
Hey,
he sets the agenda.
How far does he have to bend over?
No. Just a polite little ring kissing. He didn't even get any skid marks on his magic underwear.
Yeah, but where was the ring?
So, you know, that's what we're facing. We have a Senate full of cowards. Not full, but full enough to do damage.
Cowards and people who don't care, who are so self-absorbed in their own plan.
And I can tell you, if some of these, and I don't have the analysis here. This is a shortcoming of mine. I don't know how many of the senators who voted in favor of giving the telecoms what they want are up for re-election. I know Jay Rockefeller is one of them.
Was Senator Smith from Oregon one of them?
Don't have the list.
Rats. I got to find that list.
Well, if you do find it, email it to me, and we'll have a Mouseketeer roll call on it.
Yeah, because he is going to. Well, I'll post it because anybody who voted for it's going to catch it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the chat room, and our good friend Lottie says what we need is a good investigative journalist to find a monetary connection between the politicians and their votes.
Because that's a felony.
Yeah, 69, 29, and 2 that was the vote total. But the fact of the matter is, the work's already been done. We know how many thousands of dollars were given to Jay Rockefeller, who is the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and to Harry Reid, and they were given by the telecoms. And it's in five digits for each of them.
Yeah, and here's another little goodie. If you're checking the web, you won't find this on Yahoo's website. You won't find this on the main page of CNN's website. You've got to dig for it. No, they buried it.
Well,
the media's burying it.
So it was 69 yays to 29 nays for cloture. And two not voting, so that's not the 31 votes that we got. That was the cloture vote. That was the filibuster vote. So the Republicans stopped the filibuster by 69 to 29 to two didn't show up.
Instead of the FISA bill, what you have on the Yahoo main page for a headline is, "Scientists prove Napoleon was not poisoned by the British."
Well, I'll sleep much better tonight. on the cloture vote, not voting, Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, Hillary Clinton, Democrat, New York. Voting in favor of cloture, yes, Smith of Oregon. Voting in favor of cloture, Rockefeller of West Virginia. Bai of Indiana. Baucus of Montana. Carper of Delaware. Casey of Pennsylvania. Conrad of North Dakota. McCaskill of Missouri. Lincoln of Arkansas. Lieberman of Connecticut. Yeah, surprise. Mary Landrieu, Louisiana. Tim Johnson, South Dakota. Daniel Inouye, Hawaii. Dianne Feinstein, California. Mikulski of Maryland. Nelson of Florida. Nelson of Nebraska. Pryor of Arkansas. Salazar of Colorado. And Webb of Virginia. And Whitehouse of Rhode Island, the guy that was sent to the Senate by Rhode Islanders to replace the Lincoln Chafee. Wyden, of course, voted against cloture.
Yay.
Yeah. Akaka, Biden, Bingaman, Boxer, Brown, Bird, Cantwell, Cardin. Look at that. Bob Byrd found the right side of the issue. Dodd, Dorgan, Durbin, Feingold, Harkin, Kennedy, Kerry, Klobuchar, Lautenberg, Leahy, Levin, Menendez, Murray, Obama, Reed, Sanders, good for Bernie, Schumer, Stabenow, Teaster, and Wyden. Not voting, again, Graham and Clinton.
Well, that just put me firmly in the Obama camp. Because I was raised with the under the adage, do something, even if it's wrong, do something.
Don't just stand there. Exactly. Susan, I got a roll.
Yeah. Love to Agnes.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Onward. Hi, have I got?
Tis I.
Hey, Koss, what's up?
I seem to remember from law school many, many long years ago that...
The rule against perpetuities? No, sorry, being a smartass.
That there was a certain line in Article 1, Section 9 that says specifically, quote, no bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed.
Isn't this an ex post facto law?
Exactly! Don't these people even read the goddamn Constitution, for God's sakes?
No, and sadly enough, neither do the judges much anymore now that they're mostly right-wing flacks and hacks.
That is the supreme law of the land. That is the operating system for the country. That was beaten into my head so thoroughly, I cannot forget it. How did these people manage it?
What do you suppose, Koss, is the explanation or the excuse for why it is that this isn't an ex post facto law? Because you know there's got to be some sort of... What kind of rationale, if the ACLU or the Electronic Freedom Foundation were to sue, what kind of bass-ackward rationale would you get out of a federal judge saying, is it one of those where, I just don't have jurisdiction to hear it, I'll be darned?
I don't know. I'm sitting here looking at the Cornell University Law School page under ex post facto. It says Latin for from a thing done afterward. And it says, in the first sentence, ex post facto is most typically used to refer to a law that applies retroactively. I mean...
I'm stumped. Because it means the same thing to me, Koss, that it meant to you.
I mean, you know, how much...
This is a law passed to cover past conduct.
Right.
Now, I can understand... Look, I would disagree with it, but if they want to pass a law that says in the future you can't, Congress has that right.
Yeah, but how do you legalize things that were criminal at the time? You pass an ex post facto law that on its face, prima facie, is unconstitutional. Prima facie. For God's sakes, how much more clear can it possibly...
I know, this is 1L constitutional law. This isn't even a bar exam question. This is, if you can't answer this question at the end of the first semester, your ass is out of law school.
Exactly. I mean, I'm incredulous. And, well... I am and I'm not. On the one hand, I'm incredulous simply because it's such an idiotic, moronic exercise of bad taste. But I'm not surprised that there's so little foo-for-ah about it, because other than Glenn Greenwald, other than Fire Dog Lake, other than Digby, other than you... Who else talks about this? It's not in the mainstream media. the Post always mischaracterized it as, well, we have to have this law or else they're going to kill us all in our beds. Come on. For crying out loud, people. I mean, have we all flipped our cogs that much?
Is it just too... Is the Constitution just not interesting enough? Is that what we're dealing with? Do we need to sex it up a little bit? Do we need to put the Constitution on one side of Maxim magazine with a half-naked Paris Hilton on the other? I'm being a little bit facetious, but I'm beginning to wonder. I think it's fascinating. Obviously, you do, too. Because it's just full of fun stuff, like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's also stuff in there that would suggest that you can't have a court of star chamber, too, isn't there?
Exactly.
But we've got one of those.
Oh, yeah. And this entire thing about, well, you heard that lunatic over in England today.
Yeah.
Scalia.
Yeah, I know.
God. Oh, it just means that we can't torture people as a punishment. It doesn't say a damn thing about we can't torture them before we find them guilty.
Justice Antonin Scalia told the BBC that, quote, smacking someone in the face could be justified if there was an imminent threat. You can't come in smugly and with great self-satisfaction and say, oh, it's torture and therefore it's no good. And then told Europe, which has bled and ached and died for how many centuries, Koss?
Too many.
He has apparently finally at least begun to learn the lesson therefrom, says that they're self-righteous over the death penalty.
You know,
it makes me wonder, and I don't know, they may come and round me up for this, Koss. It makes me wonder if we could take Tony Scalia and slap him around a little bit and waterboard him a little bit and all the time ask him how many little boys he's had sex with.
That'd be fun.
And then when he finally confessed that he had, even if he hadn't, use that as evidence to convict him as a sex offender.
Good idea. Hey, I got it. While we're waterboarding him, we can attach electrodes to his nads.
Sure.
And we can give him those periodic jolts for forcing the water down his nose.
Now, okay. Let's go back to 1L for a minute, Koss. This is a quote from Scalia. To begin with, the Constitution is referring to punishment for crime. And, for example, incarcerating someone indefinitely would certainly be cruel and unusual punishment for a crime. I suppose it's the same thing about so-called torture. Is it really so easy to determine that smacking someone in the face to determine where he's hidden the bomb that is about to blow up Los Angeles is prohibited in the Constitution? It would be absurd to say you couldn't do that. And once you acknowledge that, we're into a different game. How close does the threat have to be? And how severe can the infliction of pain be?
And how good is the information that you're going to get? If he's really a terrorist, and if he really knows where the bomb is, he's not going to tell you. And if he's not a terrorist and you're inflicting horrendous pain on him, he'll tell you anything you want to know.
That's really the shortcoming of torture, isn't it?
God. Lord Almighty.
You know, we have in our own history, Koss, we have the evidence, and I can't remember the man's name, pressed to death.
Yeah. More weight.
And that's all he said, more weight, because he wouldn't confess to being a witch.
Correct.
What was his name? I can't remember.
I can't either at the moment. I know exactly who you're speaking of.
During the Salem witch hunts.
Right. He was one.
More weight.
Male witch.
Yeah. Old guy.
Yeah. And,
they piled stones on him.
Yeah. And, you know, people, I don't know if people realize this or not, but you realize that the female witches were turned off, correct?
Say again?
That the female witches that were executed
mm-hmm.
turned off You know.
No, I don't. I don't understand.
Okay, they would attach the rope to a tree limb, walk them.
Oh, until their heads came loose.
No, they just walked them a few steps off the ladder and then turned them off the ladder. They weren't even hung properly.
Oh, okay, I see.
They just turned them off the ladder. And most of them didn't break.
Giles them. Corey.
That's it, Giles Corey.
September 19th, 1692. We know how this movie ends. It's not, you know, this... And yet, is it a case of people thinking that they're so doggone smart that they've just overthought it? The same thing that I was talking about on the horn section last night, about the difference between too much language and using short, easy-to-comprehend words? Is Scalia so convinced of his own genius that seeing there shall be no cruel and unusual punishment...
Well, they have convinced themselves of their own brilliance. You know, Scalia is one of those that, you know, if you can't dazzle them with your brilliance, baffle them with your bullshit. He's of that school. And I think what we really need to do is, you know, get about 500,000, 750,000 people in the streets of D.C., with the ones closest to the Capitol and the Supreme Court carrying the torn feather pillows and buckets of boiling tar. Maybe even roll the National Razor out there. I mean, you know, that's basically how the Roman Forum was pressured into doing anything at all for the populace. Was they were having riots outside the forum, and senators knew if they walked out there without something to give the plebes, they weren't going to make it.
Let's have our little Book of Genesis moment then. Are there 750,000 people in the United States that actually give a damn about the Constitution?
Well, we got two.
It's a beginning.
I bet you we could drag most of the chat room down there. Drag hell, they'd be dragging us.
We kid and we joke about tar and feathering and stuff like that. But I'd like to see. You've got people like Bruce Fine who show up on things like the Countdown with Olbermann. And this guy is a former Reagan Justice Department lawyer, and he's one of those really, really round, spectacled, geeky lawyers that you know could kill you with a pen and paper.
Uh-huh.
And he says that this crap is torture, and he says that torture is clearly illegal, and he says that spying on the American people is illegal. Jonathan Turley says the same thing.
Certainly. This is not rocket science. It really isn't.
I mean, I remember when we used to have there were cases, and maybe you read about it once upon a time too. You remember the Christian burial case out in, what was it, Missouri, Iowa, somewhere like that?
Oh God!
Where the crazy guy had disappeared a little girl, and he was religiously insane as usual.
Yeah.
And the cops just drove him around and didn't say a word to him. They just talked amongst themselves, the two cops. You know, it's a pity she's not going to have a Christian burial. Her soul can't go to heaven without a Christian burial. And the crazy dude and the religiously insane dude in the back seat just begins to vibrate and he goes, "I'll show you!"
Oh, God.
And then, well, it all goes up on appeal because what they later did is they just took the maximum area in which the girl could have been buried and set it off into grids, and everybody went and searched the grids. Meanwhile, he ponies up the information for where the girl's buried. And they go to court, and the court rules that, well, you know, even though it was unconstitutional to do to him what you did. It's okay, because they'd already done the grid pattern thing and they would have eventually discovered her. I guess what I'm getting at, Koss, is that we didn't just happen here overnight.
No, no.
Go back and read the dissent in U.S. v. Leon, which creates a good faith exception to the entire Constitution, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Yeah. Well, as long as they thought they were doing the right thing.
Yeah. Cop goes through the door, blows away somebody. It's the wrong person. They're not even charged. Not only are they not guilty, they're not charged. It's the wrong person. It's not the person on the warrant. It's not the place specified on the warrant. And the Supreme Court said that's okay as long as they were acting in good faith.
Right. Well, it's basically what that jackass Mukasey was saying. Oh, I'm not going to persecute anybody who undertook their illegal actions on the basis of a finding of the Justice Department or a memorandum or what? That's not how laws are made, son. You were a lawyer. You were a judge. You are now Attorney General. How in God's name can you say something like that?
That we're just caught up in the minutiae. We want to give everybody a free ride out of prison on some sort of a technicality. That's what it is.
We sure as hell gave Scooter a free ride.
Yes, we did, didn't we?
I mean, good God. Paris Hilton spent more time in her first incarceration than Scooter Libby has. And she was in there on a misdemeanor.
Sort of makes you think, doesn't it?
Like I wrote in one of my things, you know, being rich is nice, being famous is wonderful, but knowing where the bodies are buried, priceless.
I know. You get the same sensation with, I think it was Lottie in the chat room who said that everybody who voted for telecom immunity from the Democratic Party is basically people who Bush has the goods on.
Yeah. He must have some really interesting pictures. I want to see them.
So is Bill Nelson's already been reelected.
No, but Harry Reid's coming up.
Yeah, but you don't get to vote for Harry Reid or against him. Harry Reid doesn't come up, according to an email I just got. Says that Harry Reid is a Class 3 senator, that he comes up in 2011.
Oh, poo.
Which means the 2010 election cycle, if I calculate it correctly. Yeah, the correspondent, Cindy, says that Harry Reid is also a Mormon Republican in deep cover. Doesn't look like it's that deep anymore.
No, no. What I'd like to know is all these other nitwits. Mikulski from Maryland. I mean, what is her problem? Jack Webb. For crying out loud. Are these people all that thoroughly compromised? Are they all that thoroughly brainwashed?
I see Jim Webb doing it just because that's the kind of person Jim Webb is. Jim Webb was elected because, and narrowly at that, because he has a D after his name now, and he wasn't George Makaka Allen.
Oh, that's true.
John Teaster from Montana, he's looking at that was pretty respectable. Even though he's got some sort of conservative credibility. It's not easy to sort all this stuff out.
And Lance?
Barbara Mikulski of Maryland, could it be that she's a closeted gay woman in the Senate?
Good possibility.
And I don't mean that disrespectfully to any of the gay community.
No, but it's... That was one of the...
I mean, this is, after all, a telecom spying bill. God only knows what kind of phone calls they've got recorded.
Exactly, exactly.
This phone call is probably being recorded.
Oh, without a doubt.
Because somewhere along the way, you used one of the keywords that they're into picking up on, tar and feather. Now, bear in mind, the Uniblab 10,000, it's somewhere deep under in the bedrock underneath the soil of northern Virginia or wherever the NSA is. The Uniblab 10,000 has not, however, been programmed to recognize the Arabic words airplane, hijack, and buildings. But it does recognize English, tar and feather.
Correct.
I could almost tolerate this if I thought these fools were competent.
Or pitchforks and torches.
Yeah.
And angry mob.
Yeah, they also don't know the Arabic for dirty bomb.
Right.
They don't know the Arabic for hello and goodbye. They don't know the Arabic for where is the bathroom, please.
Well, they've gotten rid of all their decent translators.
Because they were gay.
Well, that or they knew too much, like Sybil Edmonds.
Yeah, we haven't done her. I haven't done her justice in a long, long time, and I should.
They are.
It's hard to do some of this stuff justice, Goss.
Can't do any. I mean, it is deeper and darker than anyone really wants to think about. It's that bad. You know. I'm pretty certain. You know. I know for a fact that there's a lot that stinks to high heaven about 9/11 from a variety of aspects.
I don't have any problem saying that whatsoever.
You know, do I think George Bush was running around planting churches? No, no. But, you know, I think their own greed and avarice sold them out, because if they had actually toppled over due to the airplanes, they wouldn't have fallen in their own footprint. But because these people are so greedy, they couldn't, you know, they just couldn't do it in their greedy little hearts to have it fall over like it would have fallen over. I mean, that's the thing. These people are so predictable.
And you kind of wonder what's next. And that's America since September 11, 2001, is America waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Right. Well, and the thing is, I mean, yeah, you know, here's the bad thing about the retroactive immunity, right? A lot of these telecoms were already engaged in this eavesdropping before 9/11. How the hell do you explain that? How the hell can you possibly grant immunity for actions that were taken before the occurrence that theoretically gave you the reason to just take the boss's word for it, so to speak?
I'm glad that you say things like that, Koss, and I'm glad I think about things like that, and I'm glad that the Horn audience thinks about things like that, because it means that somebody is. That there are a wee little band of dedicated bloggers out there thinking about things like this.
Yeah, well, like I said,
because this is so much bigger than what color Hillary's pantsuit was or whether Barack Obama's ears are too big.
Exactly. And, I mean, we're still going back to show you how important things are. We're having hearings right now on steroids in baseball.
I know. So our last hope is the conference committee.
Yeah.
I wish that was a hope. I wish I would, but, you know,
Faint hope that, but that's what we got.
I've seen too many souffles fall too many times, and to suggest that Nancy Pelosi is much more than a souffle is much more than I'm willing to do.
Well, and where does she come from originally?
Baltimore.
Uh-huh, exactly. And what is Baltimore known for?
Yeah, I know.
Politically. I mean, talk about...
Well, her daddy was the mayor of Baltimore.
Yeah. And, you know, when we're talking about political corruption, all right, Maryland is as dirty as they come. Maryland, New Jersey, Louisiana, these these places are really thoroughly corrupted to their base and have been. Marvin Mandel, remember him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, yes.
I mean, I
Spiro Agnew, remember him?
Oh, yeah. And Taws before him. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah, Maryland and New Jersey are known for being corrupt. Just like Chicago is known for being corrupt. And where's Obama from? Oh, that's right, Chicago. The south side of Chicago in the baddest part of town.
I know. Hey, Koss, I got a roll, brother.
All right. Take care. It's been fun.
Oh, it has been. Don't be a stranger.
I will. I'll be back.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
There's an that's an inquiry worth having. I imagine that I'd love to I'd love to get Mark Levine's take on this too. Is this not an ex post facto law? I mean, go get Black's Law Dictionary or Cook's Commentaries on the Laws of England. It's England with an E on the end. And see if this doesn't measure up. I mean, the framers of the Constitution didn't just cook up this idea of an ex post facto law. This is another one of those things like habeas corpus that goes back. Thank you, Chris Berman. In history. It's settled. And by settled, when somebody tells you that something is settled law, that means there's nothing more to be said about it. Carved in stone. Down from the mountain. Tucked away in the box. Done. But as long as there are these people, I will appoint strict constructionists to the bench. Strict. I've come to realize that when they say strict constructionists, these Republicans, what they mean by strict is, you know, the kind of strict that they get when they go to the house of so-called ill repute and there's somebody there who's willing to give them a spanking. Whip me, beat me, make me write bad checks, and call me Edna. But when it comes to a bunch of gutless cowards in the federal government, there's no such thing as settled, even if the law itself is over 1,000 years old. Oh, okay, only 800. No, maybe 700. Maybe 5. There's always room to weasel around it. And torture never means what we always thought that torture meant. No, it's just slapping somebody around till they tell you where the bomb is. God, I don't... Oh. But if not us, who? If not now, when? Somebody's got to talk about this. You want to talk about this? 877-443-2366. 304-658-3333 on your own long-distance dialing program. Probably provided by Verizon or AT&T. Sure, it's free. Makes it easier for them to listen. This is America's liberal voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey. Thanks for lending an ear.
The Appalachian Mountains are being blown up so we can keep the lights on. Over half of U.S. electricity comes from coal, and mountaintop removal coal mining has destroyed over 470 of our mountains so far and buried over 1,000 miles of streams. If we don't stop the coal companies, there won't be anything left because coal is the biggest contributor to global warming. But we are fighting back, and this March we will converge from Mountain Justice spring breaks in two heavily coal-affected states. For more info, you can visit mjsb.org, mjsb.org.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour. Your thoughts are always more than welcome, you know that. This is Head On. This is Conversation Radio. We're not kidding. Thought you might get a giggle out of this. NBC is already projecting that Obama has won the Virginia primary. But for the first time ever, Virginia is holding primaries for both the Democratic Party, the Democratic nominations, and for the Republican nominations on the same day. And this is the fun part. The race between radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee and the McCain-Churian candidate is too close to call. Wah-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha! Oh, dear God. Just remember, the wrestler in blue trunks wins this Tuesday. Next Tuesday, the wrestler in the red trunks wins. And then, each evening, after the wrestling match is over, they go to the same restaurant, and they sit down, and they have dinner together. Not usually in the prophesying business, but I'm still pretty convinced that somebody's going to sit down and have a hard conversation with John, the McCain-Churian candidate, and explain to him that Mike Huckabee will be his vice presidential nominee, because John, we can't win without him. Dr. Dobson will bring out the evangelical values voter, just like he did for Bush. If you got Huckabee on the ticket with you, you gotta have him, John. Guy, I know you'd like to punch me, but you can't raise your arms high enough now, can you, buddy? bless his heart, nobody here is operating from a script on any of the programs on the horn. And I heard Guy James earlier today say that he respected John McCain Churian for his service. I do not. It does not take a hell of a lot of courage to drop bombs on peasants from a multi-million-dollar aircraft suspended 40,000 feet in the air. Sorry. No. And frankly, him working out his angst over the turndown service at the Hanoi Hilton against the entire world for the next 8 years. That's the kind of stuff that scares me. We have become a rogue nation. You understand that, of course. We're out of hand. And we're unstoppable. The only thing that can stop the United States is the United States itself. And if we let the McCain-Churian candidate into the White House, we may be stopping ourselves in a way that we don't even want to contemplate. Don't see any info from Maryland, and I don't see any info from D.C. I'm guessing everyone is treating D.C. as a foregone conclusion. Not so sure about Maryland. But for some reason or another today, and this is just a little bit of bizarreness, George W. Pinhead decided to talk about lynching. Go figure. This is one of those, like Jimmy Buffett said, it's kind of like the boogaloo. It plumb evaded me. We've got a noose problem in the United States. But that's been known. How long ago did we talk about that on this program? And George is just now getting around to it. I can't figure out why he felt so compelled to talk about it today. But he did.
American History Month at the White House.
Oh, I got it. Thank you. Talking about Black History Month at the White House.
But of gross injustice.
Now let's back this up a hair.
The noose is not...
Here we go. Because this is one of those moments where language matters. Hear the specific wording that he uses.
The noose is not a symbol of prairie justice.
Let's go back a little bit more.
The noose is not a symbol of prairie justice.
Oh, confound it. I'll make this work in a minute.
The noose is not a symbol of prairie justice.
No, it's not going to cooperate.
But of gross injustice. Displaying one is not a harmless prank. Lynching is not a word to be mentioned in jest.
Only when you're deadly serious, right, George? Only when it's called for. No, the part of his remarks that just sort of sent cold chills down my spine was this. This is a quote.
The era of rampant lynching is a shameful chapter in American history.
Da 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 da. What's wrong with that sentence? Da 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 da. The era of rampant lynching is a shameful chapter in American history. On the other hand, the era of periodic and occasional lynching, not so much. George, how about the era of lynching is a shameful chapter in American history? The way he put it, it was only shameful if it was being done, you know, every other day, or if it was being done a bunch of them on the same day. You know, rampant lynching. But if there's only a lynching here and there, once in a while, every now and again, you know, just when you feel the urge to lynch and it just gets all over you and you can't avoid it anymore. I mean, when Emmett Till was killed, there were you couldn't call that an era of rampant lynching. It was just the era of lynching. But as has been remarked upon by persons far more intelligent than me, see, I can barely speak the language, than me, George Bush makes these kind of mistakes when he's talking about stuff that he doesn't give a damn about. When he's talking about murdering people, when he's talking about bombing people, when he's talking about what God tells him to do, he speaks with almost scientific precision. But when it's talking about something like rampant lynching, that's another thing altogether.
As a civil society, we must understand that noose displays and lynching jokes are deeply offensive. They are wrong, and they have no place in America today.
Oh, clap, everybody. George has realized that lynching jokes are bad. Damn. Just damn. Let me check the calendar on the... Yep, February the 12th, Lincoln's birthday. And George Bush had to save this one. Well, what else am I going to talk about during Black History Month if I ain't talking about the lynching stories? I mean, I can't talk about it right now. We're saving that for Black History Month because that's about all the black history that I know. There's the lynchings. My good friend Trent Lott and Ted Cochran and Haley Barber have told me a lot about the lynchings because they're members of the Concerned White Citizens Councils. Really, they are. Conservative Citizens Council, I forget. Yeah, that's what it is. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. The applause just goes on and on and on and on. That is, of course, a crowd of people who are just stunned to realize that George has finally realized that what happened to Emmett Till might not have been the right thing. I'm not replaying the applause. It goes on like that.
This afternoon, we honor four Americans who understand what this symbol represents, and who are leading the way toward ending racial injustice across our land. Congressman John Lewis earned his place in history long before winning a seat in the United States Capitol.
This is why I used the word sociopath earlier. How can a man like George W. Bush say the name of John Lewis and not have the very words turn to ashes in his mouth?
As a young man, he became one of the leaders of the civil rights movement. He organized freedom rides and sit-ins and voter registration drives.
And your family thought those things were abominable, George. But never mind.
One Sunday in 1965, he set out to lead a march from Selma to Montgomery. The marchers never made it past the rows of state troopers outside Selma. But their message made it all the way to Washington, D.C. 5 months later, Congress passed the Voting Rights Act. More than 40 years later, John Lewis continues to inspire us, and we're blessed to have him here today.
I haven't heard such deafening applause since Nuremberg.
William Coleman has lived a life of many firsts. After graduating first in his class from Harvard Law School, he went on to become both the first black American to clerk on the Supreme Court and the first to hold a cabinet post in a Republican administration as Secretary of Transportation under President Gerald Ford. William Coleman has also helped open doors of opportunities for others. He worked alongside Thurgood Marshall.
I got a question, and maybe it's unfair. Listeners in the audience who are not white like me are free to tell me if I am out of line. Wouldn't John Lewis have done better to stay home and explain to America why he was staying home? I have tremendous respect for John Lewis. I've met John Lewis. He's an amazing man, an inspiring man. But at some point in time, doesn't somebody have to call this little Klansman in the White House on his BS? Doesn't somebody have to do that? I understand William Coleman showing up. I really, really do. But John Lewis? John Lewis? Sorry. Ernest Green was honored as well. One of the 9 African-American students in Little Rock, Arkansas, who were escorted into the city's all-white Central High School after Brown v. Board of Education. Otis Williams was also honored for his work with The Temptations. I'm really, really self-editing because I don't want to say something that I will regret or be misunderstood in what I say. But the... Is it just me? Am I over-parsing George W. Bush, the era of rampant lynching? If I am, you're free to tell me. But I don't know. It seems like somebody writes this crap for him, and I mean, he was not extemporizing. He can't extemporize. For George Bush to do what I do for 3 hours every night would make his little skull just go pop. Because I don't script. I'm not going to feed you right-wing radio where every word has been planned in advance. Because if I did, it wouldn't be real what we do. And I think, of course, of our good friend John Kuntz when I see the word lynching, because nobody's done a better job from a musical standpoint dealing with that horrible, horrible issue than John Kuntz has. Here's John Kuntz.
Across this land. There's no justice still for the murder of the innocent child named Emmett Till down in Mississippi, where the magnolia smells sweet. Still remains a stench of murder, injustice, and deceit. In the little town, news traveled fast, and when the two men heard, they decided to hunt down and kill the mockingbird. The women folk down there, they all know the facts. When the white men come to get you, you ain't never coming back. All across this land, there is no justice still for the murder of the innocent child named Emmett Till. Emmett's mother asked that his casket not be shut, so all the world could see how savage were his cuts. His killers still walk free on streets that can be seen, after boasting of their deeds in a famous magazine. All the judge could say to save his corrupted face was that Emmett was a black boy that didn't know his place. All across this land, there is no justice still for the murder of the innocent child named Emmett Till. His killers were acquitted by a jury of their peers. What was sitting in that box, we all had better fear. Emmett's death was lonesome. Two men did the crime, but the injustice that remains is now all yours and mine. All across this land, there is no justice still for the murder of the innocent child named Emmett Till.
I can't read a lynching story or a story about a fool like George W. Bush talking about lynching without thinking about that profoundly moving song. Blew me away the first time I heard it, and it continues to affect me every time since. But since we're talking a little bit about George W. Bush, I posted a link to a story from the New York Times that was provided me by our news ninja, Gene. Headline out of the New York Times, and it's going to seem sort of, and yes, this is talking about something visual, so it is therefore dancing about architecture. But it's a New York Times article under the research section. Headline, New Food Formula Tastes Fine, Kills Worms. Interesting story. The Kraft people, Kraft Foods, they are working on a new and, as the article says, unusual product line. Food that not only tastes good, but kills intestinal worms. You and I don't go around thinking about intestinal worms because largely it's not an issue for us, but in impoverished regions of the world, rural Asia, Africa, rural Latin America. Worms leave millions of children lethargic, dangerously anemic, and sometimes even passing blood. The food is in the early development stage, and it's going, and the Kraft doesn't even know yet what they're going to put it in, macaroni and cheese, who knows. But it's going to incorporate deworming chemicals developed by Tyratech, which is a company in Melbourne, Florida that makes safe pesticides. A little editorialism there on the part of the New York Times, makes safe pesticides. R. Douglas Armstrong is the chief executive of Tyratech, and he said that the pesticides are derived from plant oils. Wouldn't name the plants, but said it's sort of like the way that citronella can repel mosquitoes. Fascinating article, but it's the graphic, really, with the red Kraft oval with a slash through it, and is this the... What? Covert liberal media trying to send a message? It's the red Kraft oval with a slash through it over a big W that's made to look like a worm. No, really. But we should, I don't know, maybe we should print this out, this graphic. Maybe somebody can put it up on the web, on the blog at headonradionetwork.com so you can see this for yourself. Because God knows I can't read the URL for it. But we should maybe send this to every member of Democratic, so-called member of Congress. No W worm. Because I haven't seen a better graphic representation of George W. Bush, and yes, the angle, or the side, the leg of the W on the right hand side could be interpreted as something other than wormish. I'll leave that to others to determine. But this is, it just struck me. I just, you know, Gene sent me the article, and I read the article, and then I kind of scrolled back up, and I went, holy cats! That's just precious. Underneath it, in the small print under the graphic, it says, parasitic worms infect at least 290 million people, a number that could be reduced by adequate sanitation that separates sewage from human contact. Heck, we can't separate the feces from our meat in this country. Oops, there he goes again. Parasitic worms. All these long years that we've been looking for the perfect metaphor for George W. Bush, and it was right there in front of us all the time. Parasitic worms. It took the New York Times putting that worm in the shape of a W to bring it all home. No, this doesn't forgive stenographer Judy Miller for all of her precious drum beating about the war, but this is pretty darn good. I mean, I'm surprised that the right wing, hopping up and down little freaks haven't picked up on this yet. New York Times represents W as worm. Proof of liberal bias. Sometimes they get it right. Sometimes they, well, they don't. Saw a report earlier today, you know, there was an earthquake in Mexico. And there is an anchor on CNN. We don't get CNN anymore, so I'm having to rely on the truthfulness of the person doing the reporting. But there's an anchor on CNN by the name of Heidi Collins. She's just so cute. And for years, we've been clicking across, and I'd stop, and she'd be on, and I'd say, Agnes, it's Beaker again, because more than anything else, Heidi Collins looks like the Muppet Beaker. Her direct resemblance to the Muppet Beaker changes from time to time depending on her hairstyle, but there was a time there when she kind of had it poofy up in the front, and it was just Beaker up and down. You remember Beaker.
Not in the microwave, not normally.
Yeah, Beaker. So she was trying to do the reader on the earthquake in Mexico today, which was apparently centered in the Mexican state of Oaxaca. O-A-X-A-C-A, Oaxaca. Whence comes, I believe, Monte Alban brand mezcal, you know, the one with the worm in it. No, that's not all I know about Oaxaca, but you know, it might be a point of reference for some of you. Heidi Collins got it out as Osaka. Osaka. One person said that they thought that it was she was talking about Osaka, Japan. I know for a fact, unless things have changed dramatically, that CNN is a subscriber to several wire services. Eons ago, when dinosaurs roamed the earth and I was there, they were subscribers to Agence France-Presse, Reuters, at the time UPI, Associated Press. If somebody was if somebody was reporting it, it went into CNN. That was the way that it worked. And every last one of those wire services provided a daily pronouncer. Whether there was a story about Zbigniew Brzezinski or Lech Wałęsa or Karol Wojtyla or Oaxaca. And it would be said, and it was done phonetically, Oaxaca, because newsreaders are not known for being terribly intelligent. Oaxaca. But the beauty of it, if you were a newscaster or a newsreader, was that all you had to do was to go to the pronouncer, and it was right there for you. Apparently, Heidi Collins is too good. Well, of course, that's Osaka. Yes, of course. I've been there many times. I just love Osaka. Sometimes the media gets it right. Get it right. Sometimes they get it terribly, terribly wrong. Because Oaxaca, of course, is the state in Mexico that was one of the furthest reaches of the Mexica Empire, later referred to as the Aztecs. And the real name of the place was Huaxacac. The Spanish invaders and murderers couldn't pronounce the native words. So Huaxacac, because they couldn't pronounce the sh diphthong, became Oaxaca. And they just dropped the last k sound at the end. Huaxacac, Oaxaca. And doing further injustice to the native language, today, Heidi Collins, CNN, and Osaka. And I don't expect people to be perfect. Lord knows that some nights on this program I feel like I'd probably stutter more than Mel Tillis, because I get so flustered that I just, and you know, I'm, it's like when a CD gets stuck and just sits at nin. So God knows I recognize my own faults. But when they're paying you that much money and they're actually giving you the answers to the questions, all you have to do is proofread your copy. That's all you have to do. Oaxaca. There it sits. Big, bold letters. Probably every time it shows up in the copy, it says, Oaxaca. But because our news readers have convinced themselves that they're so much smarter than the rest of us, they do things like turning Oaxaca, which used to be Washakak, into Osaka. Gotta love it. Just gotta love it. It's about 10 minutes before the hour. And, oh, I don't know. Let's get away from some of this for a minute. Oh, golly, I can't not do this. I was going to save it for tomorrow, but it's too good, and it'll only take a few minutes. Headline, Vatican approves exorcism center to deal with rising demand from the demonically challenged. That's right. The Roman Catholic Church, that is so concerned about the sanctity of sperm that it can't allow people in Africa to use condoms to help stop the spread of HIV/AIDS, is, however, going to pour enough money to burn a sopping wet elephant into an exorcism center in the middle of a potato field in Poland. Because there is apparently, according to that vermin-eyed little freak in the papacy, an increasing demand for exorcisms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Poland only has about 70 priests who are trained exorcists. Italy only has about 300 trained exorcist priests. So they're going to build an exorcism center in Poland. Because people have gotten away from their consciousness of demonic possession, I suppose. You can see the seminar topics now, can't you? Asmodeus, diarrhea medicine or servant of the Prince of Darkness? Beelzebub, the devil himself? Or a euphemism for a child's ear syringe? That's right. They're going to build an exorcism center in the middle of Poland. Never mind the fact that, among other things, a former priest named Daniel Koroganu was actually convicted of murder in the death of a nun during an exorcism gone bad. A Romanian court gave the monk 7 years for that murder. Irina Cornici was 23 years old. She was a nun. She probably suffered from schizophrenia. Say probably because she had been previously diagnosed with it. But Father Koroganu, see, names aren't always easy. I understand that, but I didn't get a pronouncer for Koroganu. And now I can say it. Father Koroganu decided that it wasn't schizophrenia, but that it was, in fact, demonic possession. So he tied her to a cross, this pathetic 23-year-old woman, and she later died from dehydration, exhaustion, and suffocation. Now bear in mind, just to be fair, this was not a Roman Catholic priest. This was a Romanian Orthodox priest. Well, he wasn't really a priest because he never finished his training. Oh, well, okay, that explains why we need the training center then, so that we can't have this happening anymore. by rogue amateur exorcists. Don't! Don't you love the reasoning? It's the same reasoning that allows a man like Antonin Scalia to say that torture is nothing more than a slap on the face to find out where the bomb is. The church is, however, seeking applicants. Oh, how can I not send a resume in on this? Seeking applicants for new exorcists. Full medical coverage, full-time job. The church is looking and advertising for exorcists. Just amazing. And in calling for these new exorcists, the head exorcist guy also took a moment to explain that the mark of the devil, you may have heard this during the news that ran during Billy Shear's Night Sounds last weekend, the mark of the devil is upon Harry Potter. Yeah, Harry Potter's got the mark of the devil. Even though Harry Potter isn't real. It's kind of like Professor Dumbledore is gay, even though Professor Dumbledore doesn't exist. And these are the people who want to call America back to its Christian roots. Mother, just makes you... makes it a little hard to stomach. Just a little bit. Exorcism center. Can you see me as an exorcist? Wouldn't I? The flying spaghetti monster commands you. The flying spaghetti monster commands you. Come out and be touched by his noodly appendage. Yes! Astonishing. Only, and it's only astonishing because this is supposedly the 20th century. And this stuff was supposed to have gone the way of the dodo. With the Inquisition. But it's living proof that if you don't root it all out, kind of what the Inquisition used to say, if you don't root it all out, it'll rise up again. How were we supposed to know that they were talking about themselves? But they were. So we'll come back and, I don't know, we'll do some real stories or something. Or maybe we'll whistle and fish and whistle, or whistle and fish or whatever for the next hour. One way or another, we'll have a blast. Your phone calls, you know, of course, are always welcome. 877-443-2366. The email, bob@headonradio.com. On your own nickel, 304-658-3333. We'll be back on the horn.
I lit up from Reno, I was trailed by 20 hounds. Didn't get to sleep that night till the morning came around. Sit out running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Ran into the devil, baby, loaned me 20 bills.
hills. Sit out and run, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. I ran down to the levee, but the devil caught me there. Took my $20 bill and it vanished in the air. I'm running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Got two reasons why I cry awake, lonely night. The first one's named Sweet Anne Marie, and she's my heart's delight. Second one is prison baby, the sheriff's on my trail. And if he catches up with me, I'll spend my life in jail. Got a wife in Chino, baby, the one in Cherokee. First one say she got my child, but it don't look like me. Said I'm running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight.
The full black and white when it shows up sides and leave a little bit of both away. The only blood that's any cleaner is the blood that's blue or greener. Without evil, you just get meaner and the blood you gave gives you away.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. GM is putting the finishing touches on its apparent strategic plan to destroy traditional UAW wages and benefits. It's offering buyouts to all 74,000 U.S. GM UAW members. It's an effort to get as many as possible to leave so they can be replaced by workers earning half the wages. The drive to destroy good U.S. auto jobs, GM calls it cutting costs, brings to an end a decades-long Union One economic benefit to working families that lifted hundreds of thousands of people into the U.S. middle class. Communities nationwide also benefited from the economic multiplier of those good auto wages as the money was spent throughout the U.S. economy. Workers replacing current auto workers will earn about $14 an hour, too little to even afford most new GM vehicles, and still keep roofs over their heads. Hundreds of Teamsters rallied outside the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco on Tuesday as the union awaits a decision on Bush's Mexican Trucks program. The Teamsters have challenged the program as illegal in violation of congressional set safety requirements and a ban on funding the program. The Teamsters say Mexican trucks are unsafe and their drivers aren't as well regulated as U.S. drivers. Ed McElroy is resigning as president of the American Federation of Teachers. He'll be replaced by Randy Weingarten, who currently heads New York City's United Federation of Teachers. The AFT has 1.4 million members and is the second largest teachers union after the National Education Association. Unions in the United States have long sought to organize North American laundry giant Cintas. This month, a Canadian union did just that. Jesse Russell reports.
Unite Here has been trying to organize workers at North America laundry giant Cintas for years. Between 2004 and 2007, the company has chosen to settle more than 70 allegations of interfering with a worker's right to organize. In the past, the National Labor Relations Board has called the company's violations intensive. But this month, Unite Here in Canada won a fight to organize Cintas workers in Montreal. The Quebec Labor Board certified the petition filed by the Cintas workers last week. Canada has different labor laws than the United States, which make it easier for workers to organize in that country. While labor has been unable to organize Walmart stores in the United States, Canada has watched at least three Walmart stores become unionized. Here is today's economic report. Ever had an office romance? Don't worry. Even though some companies have policies against such romances, roughly 40% of those polled in a new Career Builder report said they have dated a coworker. Of those, 29% say they actually went on to marry the coworker they had a relationship with. Where do those romances begin? 11% said during happy hour, another 11% said lunch, and 10% said it was love at first sight.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Hope you enjoyed that little interlude. I'll take any opportunity to play the truckers. Of course, you know that. About 10 minutes past the hour, and just to give you an idea, and again, just to give you an idea of how the mainstream media are, over at MSN's homepage, side by side, two stories. Bush blasts noose displays, which we've already talked about. And, of course, lingerie anxiety? Tips to tone up look great. Welcome to America, citizen. Bush blasts lynching and lingerie anxiety. One wonders what the message is. Is it downplaying the lynching story or upplaying the lingerie story? Lingerie. I don't. One, if it's French, one would think the French pronunciation would be lingerie. Mm-hmm. So, lynching, lingerie, hey, they both begin with L. Let's put them at the top of the list. And people get paid for this. All right, as the punchline to the great old chestnut of a joke goes, coffee breaks over, back on your heads. What we have here, let's see if this is worth the effort. See if this is as bothersome to you as it is to me. Turns out, since our good friend Cossack mentioned the fine city of Baltimore, not too long back, an hour or so ago, it might be worth mentioning Baltimore police officer Salvatore Rivieri. He got suspended recently, not for anything that he overtly did, but for something he got caught doing that he didn't know was being recorded. God bless the video cell phone. There were some young skateboarders down by the Inner Harbor, which is, of course, a noted attraction in Baltimore. And apparently, Officer Rivieri has a thing about skateboarders. Let's see if we can make this out. I'll give you the color commentary if it's not obvious.
Yeah, I'm trying to tell everybody how to see your
earphones
in.
Get your earphones out of here.
Can you hear me?
Don't
get defensive, my son. You spend some time in juvenile. You're not allowed to ride your skateboards down. Nowhere.
Yeah, I didn't hear you.
That's why I asked you if you have the thing on. Don't get defensive with me. You back off me. I'm not your father. You hear me? I'm not your father. You give that attitude to your father. You give it to me, I'll smack you upside
the head. Yeah, I don't have a father.
Shut your mouth. I'm talking.
Eric, shut up, dude.
Where are you from?
Dude, I didn't do anything.
Where are you from?
No.
Give me that skateboard.
In case you're wondering, he's just taken the child into a headlock and thrown him to the ground.
Sit down.
What the hell?
Sit down.
Dude,
sit down. I'm not a dude.
I'm calling. Aaron,
you're damn right. You're calling your mother.
Dude, don't
take
my skateboard. I didn't do anything.
Dude. Hey, call me dude. Hey, one more time. Are you from the county or something?
No, I didn't do anything. I didn't hear you.
Hey, Mr.
Where are you from?
Now, see, he's taken the kid's skateboard. He's gone and thrown it in his little mini vehicle. This guy's wearing black short pants and a black and yellow top with wraparound sunglasses. The kid has explained to him, you know, and it's not like, I mean, it's not like the kid's saying, you know, cussing him or anything. You're hearing this just as well as I am. Kid said, I didn't hear you. Now he's taking the skateboard, he's thrown it into the car, and he comes back at this kid for more, you know, because he's a big, tough man.
I'd like to talk to him.
I didn't even do anything.
First of all, you disrespected me, this badge, and my department.
Oh, he disrespected the badge and the department. Officer, I understand it's part of the local parlance, but let me explain something to you real quick, you damn moron. To disrespect is not a verb! Somebody should get up in his face and scream at him about torturing the language. What's he teaching the children? Jackass.
You understand me? When I'm talking to you, you shut your mouth and you listen. Obviously, your parents don't...
Your papers are not in order.
Put a foot in your butt quite enough, because you don't understand...
Oh, yeah, okay. Your parents haven't been violent enough with you, you little punk. You skating around here on your little skateboard with your little earbuds in your ears. And your little iPods. When I was a kid your age, I had to wear roller skates. We didn't have skateboards. And if I wanted to listen to music inside my head, I had to wear great, big, uncomfortable headphones. You little turd, you don't have any appreciation for what you've got. You listen to me.
In the meaning of respect.
I'm going to teach you some respect. Yeah, that's what you're teaching him, officer. You're teaching him that the cops, the people who are supposed to be public servants, who are supposed to look out for the safety and well-being of the community, are actually a bunch of giant assholes. Like you. This dude shouldn't have been suspended. This dude should be fired. He should be charged with a crime, because after all, the evidence of the crime is right there on the video. When he takes the kid in the headlock, whom he hasn't arrested, who is a juvenile, and throws him to the ground.
Throw him to the ground again, sir?
Yes, throw him to the ground, Centurion. Woof we.
First of all, you better learn how to speak. I'm not man, I'm not dude.
No, you're not a man and you're not a dude. You're just a big old honking ass. Or maybe you're something entirely different.
You dick!
Yeah, more like.
I am Officer Rivieri.
Oh, well.
Now, the sooner you learn that, the longer you're going to live in this world.
That he's Officer Rivieri is going to grant him long life? What is this, some sort of Decalogue thing? Is he one of these Ten Commandments people? Honor thy father and thy local cop in short pants and a stupid little car, that thy years may be long upon the earth? What is this?
Because you go around doing this kind of stuff, somebody's going to kill you.
For skateboarding? Skateboarding is a capital crime now? What is that, a pledge pin?
How old are you? 14.
Good number.
Sit down.
17.
Ah, well, if you're 14, you have to sit down. If you were 15, I'd have kicked your ass.
17.
Did you not just hear me?
Officer Rivieri's having a very bad day. The department put him in a really embarrassing little uniform that makes him look like a bumblebee and gave him a stupid little circus car to drive around the inner harbor in. And he's going to deal with the criminal skateboarding element. Welcome to America! This is America! I mean, Officer Rivieri probably made it through high school by the skin of his teeth. And all he wanted was the badge and the gun and the hot car and the nightstick. Instead, he gets the badge, the bumblebee uniform, and the circus car. It's all just probably not working out so well for Officer Rivieri. Is it? Wait, there's more. It's a Ginsu commercial. All right, they're 14 and they're sitting down.
Son, what is your problem? You go...
Are you from Oklahoma or Texas? I ain't never seen nothing but steers and queer... No, wrong movie.
Go to school and give your teacher this kind of lip and backtalk your teacher...
He hasn't given the asshole any lip! This freak has some sort of weird-ass internal monologue going on inside his head where the kid's disrespecting him. He hasn't said anything. Dude, don't take my skateboard. Oh, well, somebody called Justice Scalia. He needs to be slapped around a little bit for that now, doesn't he?
Now, what makes you think you can come and do it to a police officer?
Do what? Do what?
What are you people, on dope?
You dick!
Stop calling me dude! A dude is somebody who works on a ranch!
Oh, well, okay. I'm sure the child was confused about that. He goes home and everybody's riding horses, and, you know, at school, they're all on horseback, and they get along little doggy because they're all dudes.
Your friends got brains in their head. They know when to shut their mouth. You just keep flapping. Now, what's your name? Eric what? Speak up.
Oh, first he was talking too much, now he's not talking loud enough.
Where do you live, Eric Bush?
Bush! Oh, God. Sorry.
What's your address? What is it?
Pyle! I can't hear you!
Is your mother home?
Is she hot?
You want to call her so I can talk to her?
Because I really want to talk to her.
And I'll explain to her what the problem is.
Kid's obeying. He's dialing the phone. Officer Friendly walks out of the frame.
You got that camera on?
Ah, there we go. Officer Friendly finally wised up. You got that camera on? If I find myself on YouTube, well, Officer Friendly, you're on YouTube. And everybody knows what a horse's ass you are.
The youngsters in this time, this day and age, the youngsters don't know any respect. They don't understand the value of a perfectly good skateboard. Why, I used to have to take roller skate wheels and put a 2x4 on them, and that's all I had for a skateboard. And I had to walk to school through 6 feet of snow, uphill both ways, and I only had mustard sandwiches for lunch, you little punk.
Sure, we have some fun with these jerks. But this is deadly serious. I didn't see a gun on the dude. Dude! Dude! But that thing escalated out of control in a hurry. And that man is a potential killer. He should be charged with a crime. Is that camera on? Oh. I better not find myself on... Uh-huh. But there were witnesses, weren't there, Ossifer? This isn't a disease. This is a symptom thereof. This is life in the coward nation. The COWERED nation. We need more community policing to stop the demon skateboarders. I just wanted the hot cruiser and the gun, and they gave me the circus car and the short pants. But now he's been suspended. And I don't know right offhand for how long. Sterling Clifford, a spokesman for the Baltimore Police Department and the mayor's office, said authorities have begun an internal affairs investigation. I'm sorry, internal affairs whitewashing.
The entire incident raised red flags for all the members of the command staff who watched the video. We were very displeased.
Granted, the kids were skateboarding, and skateboarding's not allowed. You come up, you tell them skateboarding's not allowed, and you shoo them out. Shoo. Now, go on, get, go on. Welcome to Bushmerica. Welcome to the Terror Nation. To the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Bob?
Yeah.
This is Carla.
Hey, Carla, how are you?
I'm fine. Couple of things. I want to send you a donation.
Oh, bless your heart.
I have misplaced your little happy address.
You got something? You got something to write with, right quick?
Oh, sure. I've got everything except, you know, I know it's Eisenhower something.
Yeah, it's 1038 North Eisenhower Drive.
1038.
Yes, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive.
Uh huh.
Beckley, West Virginia.
Uh huh.
25801. Oh, wait. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318.
PMB 318.
Yeah. Beckley, West Virginia, 25801.
Okay. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801.
Correct.
Okay. Was it last week or the week before? You talked about having going out to Denver.
Oh, yes.
And if you still plan to do that, I will send you a donation specifically for that, or you can use the donation that I'm sending to you.
Okay? Well, we will...
However you guys want to spend the money, that's your choice. Right?
Okay, well, bless your heart. We'll do something really frivolous and spend it on bills.
Okay, that'll be good. And if I get a donation... from the little happy text guy, you know, for the economic stimulus,
mm-hmm.
I will send you $100.
Bless your heart. I promise you, we will be far more stimulated than Walmart could ever imagine it.
Right. But I can't guarantee you. I don't know whether I fall into the little happy category.
But Guy James is working the information end on the credentialing. I'm working some logistics stuff, and I'm hoping that it will work out. We can do it.
Okay, well, I'll keep listening to the program and find out about more about it as you make your progress. But one thing I'd like to talk about is the new Attorney General.
Oh, General Mukasey.
Yeah, you could almost Mukaka, you know.
Not far from it, is he?
No, I don't, because I think you were in Massachusetts last week. But I don't know whether you saw the hearing. But he was miserable, and this is the best that they can get for the Attorney General. I'm almost think Gonzalez would have been a little better, but not because of the, you know, I can't.
No, I know exactly what you mean. This guy just has incompetence sort of seeping out of his pores, doesn't he?
Yeah. And what does that say for our Senator Schumer from New York, or Giuliani? Because I think initially Giuliani is the one that recommended this guy as Attorney General, and then Schumer endorsed him. But it was torture. It was absolutely torture to listen to him answer questions and trying to, when they kept pressing him about torture and how condescending he was, George Orwellian speak, when he was talking to the Dems. But when he talked to the Repubs, it was all sweetness and nice. But if this is the judge, I could be a judge.
Oh, I know. Absolutely. That's the thing. The Bush administration has established a new low for competence, haven't they? Whether it's who's the bald guy, the really creepy looking comic book horror movie guy that runs Homeland Security?
Chertoff.
Yeah. Thank you. We had the news story a year or so ago that talked about how he spends the better part of his days getting massages. The entire Bush administration is nothing if not devoted to not getting the job done, because that's the Republican modus operandi. Don't do the job, so when the job gets screwed up, you can complain that government can't do anything right.
And he looks like he's a survivor of the Holocaust. I mean, he's gotten thinner and more gaunt looking as the more that he's in office, because I don't think he was gaunt looking when he first went in, but he's worse now, and it's just terrible.
Somebody took his portrait of Dorian Gray out of the closet, I think.
Yeah, and then what was in, I had another thing, I can't think, well, I'll think about it in a second. Before Willard pulled out of the presidential race, I heard something about Bain Capital, that he was going to sell Bain Capital to the Chinese. Did you hear anything about that?
I saw something about that along the way. Did you see any follow-up on it?
Nope, just that one little blurb, and I haven't done a Google to see if I can find out anything more about it. And then the other thing that I just heard, and I think I heard it about a month ago or 2 months ago, and then I heard it just right after Romney pulled out. And since you're in the radio side of the thing, that Bain Capital was going to buy out, 2,300 or 23 Clear Channel radio stations?
Clear Channel has been trying to unload its unprofitable stations for a while now. At one point, there was a rumor that the Carlyle Group was going to buy them, but it was too big a dog for even them to touch.
Oh, okay.
And now this business about he.
Well, that would, if he does that, you know, and he tries to polish up his, you know, image, which they say that he will probably. And that's one of the there's a Kurt Jowers from the University Utah Hinckley Institute of Politics here in Salt Lake, saying that, you know, he's stepping back and he will probably try to polish up his, you know, image. And if he gets these radio stations, he'll be all over the airwaves, maybe even get his own business talk show.
But it won't be much of a show, though, Carla, because all he can say is, I got a nice $400 haircut, and then I went and I bought Staples stock instead of Boston Market, and for that I'm a genius.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it just is. And these Repubs are just getting worse and worse. They're just having conniption fits because they're falling down so far in the polls, and that the Democrats are, you know, getting all this cohesiveness sort of.
I hope we get some cohesiveness, Carla, because I can't stand the bickering and the infighting between the Obama and the Clinton camps for much longer. It's driving me bananas.
Yeah, well, that, you know, I've heard you say that, you know, and I haven't seen too much that on, you know, of course I don't get all...
It's not, and to be, well, to be fair, it's not so much between them anymore because there aren't so many debates, so there isn't so much sniping, personal sniping, but among the followers, it's just awful.
All the pundits for them.
Or their surrogates, or the people, you know, just the rank and file who have decided that, that Barack Obama is the second coming of sliced bread and that Hillary Clinton wrote the recipe for bread.
Mm-hmm. What about your little happy Jay Rockefeller? I understand he was the one that voted for more surveillance for us on this new, that telecommunication bill.
Oh, he did. He did. And I called and shared a piece of my mind that I really couldn't spare. But, yeah, he did. And I have determined that come primary time, if I go vote in the primary, I won't vote for him. I won't vote against his opponent, but I will not vote for him. And the same thing goes for the general.
Uh-huh.
Because this is a screw-up of monumental proportions, Carla.
Mm-hmm. And then the other, back on the election, I heard a discussion, maybe it was on NPR radio, when they were talking about the superdelegates, and they talked about this in the credential or the nominating committee, that there's three people on them, and one of them, she's an African American, I can't think of an, but she was, oh, the lady that was under Clinton was the Secretary of Labor, I believe it was.
Are you talking about Donna Brazile?
No. Donna Brazile is just a commentator. No, this is the Secretary of Labor under Clinton. I can't think. I can see her face and everything, but she's on like a big mucky-wuck in the DNC. And then another person, I think it was a man, and one other Latino lady, they all three were working for the Bill Clinton administration. Now, isn't that a setup? If they, you know, with the superdelegates and who and how the superdelegates will vote. Now, I'll be ticked off if the public who, when they vote for a certain candidate, and then these little superdelegates that are the things that we're trying to get rid of, you know, like former presidents and senators and that has the vote to override the popular vote. And I think that's what's wrong with her, you know, if the public can't speak for who they want and it's overridden by a superdelegate, that we have a problem with our democracy.
Carla, at least in the nominating process, we had something approaching a popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that by anybody who sat and watched the 2000 election and watched those members of the House of Representatives deliver that petition that was written by Mark Levin begging the Senate to object to the Electoral College count, we know that the Electoral College supersedes the popular vote in the presidential general election, but at least to choose who the candidate is, we had some notion that we were doing it on a popular basis.
Mm-hmm.
These superdelegates take that idea away. They take that idea out behind the barn and beat it to death, truth be told. So that the idea that the superdelegates are in play and that superdelegates might decide who the nominee is as opposed to the person, the people of the country who have gone out and stood in rain and stood in snow and gotten cold, wet, you know, whatever, in caucusing or voting, it's anathema to me.
I know.
And it's got to be done away with. The superdelegates have got to go.
And that applies both to the Republicans as well as...
No. The Republicans don't have superdelegates.
Huh?
The Republicans don't have superdelegates.
Oh, so whenever they get these delegates, they, you know, they go... Oh, is that why they when they do the count, that the Democrats have more delegates than the Republicans? Are they adding in the superdelegates to... And that's why the...
I'm not sure, because the superdelegates are supposed to... be either uncommitted or publicly committed. One of the things, and I think I'm not nearly sharp enough on it, and maybe the rest of America isn't either, is understanding how the delegates are allotted. Because, for instance, when it comes to Electoral College votes, we know that the when it comes to delegates, there are five delegates for every state because or not five delegates for instance. No, slow down, Bob. My state has five delegates because we have three members of the House and two senators. Three and two is five, and boom, that's what we got. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, and the same goes for every other state. However many members of the House plus however many members of the two members of the Senate, boom, there you go. But in terms of how the delegates are allotted within a party basis on a primary situation is determined by the individual parties in the several states. So that, for instance, the reason we came up with the problems in Florida and Michigan is because Florida and Michigan decided, contrary to the Democratic National Committee's wishes, that they wanted to move their primaries up.
Mm-hmm.
And the DNC objected, and consequently we have that mess. In other words, state party machines largely determine the electoral process in their own states, and they allot delegates accordingly. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. The more I hear,
I feel like I'm talking about reading tea leaves.
Right. And now Florida, and looks like Florida and Michigan will be in play, and they'll have to do a do-over because it's not right if the other Democratic candidate took their name off of the ballot in Michigan and Clinton didn't, and then the other candidates refused to campaign in Florida, and I think she did, but then at the last minute she goes down there and gives her victory speech. And all things in politics are not fair. But back on the superdelegates in that nominating committee with the three,
mm-hmm.
I find it interesting, because it looks like it's all lopsided if they all worked for Clinton. But then David Brock, who's works for the Christian Broadcasting Network.
Oh, David Brody?
Yeah, David Brock is Media and Matters.
Right,
for a minute.
Really different people.
Yeah, he said it's 50-50, and I don't see that if there's three people are all for Clinton. I don't know where he gets his 50-50. So they distort the truth. They lie right there.
Well, I about had a hissy when I was clicking across on Sunday morning, and I just saw Tim Russert's sort of jowly visage there, and I stopped for a minute, kind of the way you slow down going by a car wreck. And I saw this David Brody character sitting on the panel there on Meet the Prestitutes. And I couldn't believe, I expect a lot of low quality broadcasting when I tune in NBC and Meet the Press.
Mm-hmm.
But I never dreamed, in all my born days, I never dreamed that I would see the senior political correspondent for the Christian Broadcasting Network sitting on that panel as a legitimate journalist. this is a so-called television network that does news stories. Peter Godbold covered this on Strictly Confidential a couple of weeks ago. This is a news department that does news stories about people picketing for Jesus along the side of I-35 in Texas because they found some reference about a road of iniquity or some such in Isaiah chapter 35. So they decided that God and Isaiah were talking about I-35 going through Dallas.
You're kidding.
I wish I was. And that constitutes a legitimate enough news organization to get you a seat at the table on Meet the Press.
Amazing. Absolutely. Yeah, because I thought, what is he doing on there? After it dawned on me.
Is he going to speak in tongues? You don't know. Is he, he's the senior political correspondent for the Christian Broadcasting Network. Is he going to just reach under the table some Sunday morning and go, hey, Tim, you want a snake?
Oh, what has America become? What has America become?
A blooming mess.
Mm-hmm.
And about a half a comedy program, too.
And
the rest of the world, Carla, would be looking at us and laughing if we weren't so terrifyingly well-armed.
And this is a different, I don't mean for it to be disrespectful, but they just recently lost in the House that Tom Lantos.
I know. That was very, very sad.
Yeah. But
the only Holocaust survivor to serve in the House.
Mm-hmm.
And a pretty decent human being from everything that I read.
Well, you know, I used to think that, but you know, he came out, you know, very strong for the Iraq war. I guess he wrote the resolution or what it was and everything, and they're eulogizing him as an advocate for human rights, you know, like in the genocide that has been happening in Darfur and Rwanda and stuff. But he never came out and criticized the United States for what we've done to the Iraqi people that are over there, the killing from, you know.
And sadly, he was the chairman of the House Committee on Human Rights, and yet that will be the blot to his record and to his legacy, I guess, is mm-hmm. the word I'm looking for.
And I saw something that he had been in, you know, in Congress or something for over 60 years. Well, that meant he went in when he was about 20, and I don't know that much about him, but that's an awful long time. And then they were just saying, here he came, Duncan Hunter and David Dwyer. Oh, they came in together for the 80s. So maybe the guy was saying it was use the wrong date or something like that. So anyway, that's my feeling about him, because the more I watched him, you know, at the beginning, I think during the Clinton administration, I sort of liked him because he did seem like he played fair. But then after the, you know, 9/11, I think he just went,
I think the
Holocaust came and hit him.
How could that not be part of his own ethical and moral timeline? I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But he made some rather profound mistakes, especially toward the last decade and a half or so of his career, that called it sort of made it seem like he had either forgotten or decided to have a selective memory that genocide can happen to other people too.
Mm-hmm.
So you just don't know. Carla, it's so very good to hear from you. I'm about out of time here, but please call in any time, okay?
Okay, well, I called you last week when you went out to dinner with your wife for your birthday, so happy birthday.
It was actually my daughter's birthday.
No, the week before.
Oh, okay, yeah, well, okay, yeah, that I did. Okay, thank you very much.
Did you have birthday last week?
Yeah, week before.
Or the week before, yeah.
Yeah, I played.
And I couldn't get your address. Your daughter said, no, we can't give it out. So.
Oh, well, we've kind of trained them well, haven't we?
But she was very pleasant to talk with.
Oh, we're very fortunate. We've got sweet kids. But thank you for the kind wishes.
Okay.
So far, 45 is working out a little bit strangely, but we'll muddle through.
Well, you're doing a good job. Just keep on trucking.
Thank you, Carla. You have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I want to wrap up by sharing something with you. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the right-wing nuts are having an absolute purple polka-dotted screaming hissy fit over something that has transpired in the city of Berkeley. The city of Berkeley has, city council has passed a resolution telling the Marine Corps recruiting station that they are not welcome there. In other words, the city of Berkeley's city council has exercised its right to free speech and should not therefore be punished for it. Well, the American Family Association sent me an action alert about it. And, of course, they had a link that I could go to send an email to the city council of Berkeley with a pre-written email excoriating them and calling down the wrath of God upon them for not letting wanting the Marines to recruit within Berkeley, California. So I, of course, wipe that out. And any chance I get to not send a hateful email pre-written by the American Family Association, but still use their servers to send a message, I take. Because I figure there's got to be one small, still voice in the middle of all those millions of knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing fundamentalist freaks who follow the Reverend Donald Wildman. Somebody's got to do it, so I figure I can be the one. So I sent a letter to the... an email to the Berkeley City Council using the servers of the American Family Association. And I told them, you know, good on you. Proud of you. Hooray for you. Good for you for using your First Amendment rights to speak in the name of your constituents who are demanding an end to this filthy, rotten, stinking war and the occupation that goes with it. The occupation was really sort of the extra pair of pants that you got with the Iraq War suit, wasn't it? And I just said, stand strong, because the American Family Association is a gang of religiously insane thugs who think that the First Amendment applies only to them and that the First Amendment is little more than a life support system for the religion industry. Accompanying the action alert was a letter from Debbie Lee, whose son died in Operation Iraqi Freedom. She's trying to get out there and grab attention sort of as a reverse Cindy Sheehan. As many of you know, I am the mother of the first Navy SEAL who was killed in Operation Iraqi Freedom. I've dedicated my life to giving voice to my fallen hero, Mark Allen Lee, and all those who have served or are currently serving in the United States military so that we may remain a safe and free nation. I grieve for this woman. Her son's life was wasted, was thrown away as little more than confetti after a party. Her son did not need to die in the stinking, foul, bug-infested, disease-ridden sands of God-forsaken Iraq. But she wants to wave her son's bloody shirt in support of having other mothers grieve alongside her, so I say to hell with her. You can't begin to imagine how horrified and angered I was when I learned that the Berkeley City Council... She doesn't live in Berkeley. She's not a Berkeley City Council member's constituent. When I found out that the Berkeley City Council had passed three measures that attacked our troops... No, it didn't. It just told the Marines that they're not welcome to recruit there. That attacked our troops and called our military men and women uninvited and unwelcome intruders in their own country. No, it's in Berkeley, you dumb woman. I don't use woman as, you know, modifying dumb. I use dumb to modify woman, we understand me, right? For the past few years, I had to hear from anti-war liberals about how terrible it was for our troops to be in Iraq or Afghanistan. Now the anti-military radicals have convinced an American government body to say that, no, they're Berkeley. Berkeley. They're the Berkeley government body, you stupid twit. An American government body to say that our troops don't belong here in America. So I was more than committed to take action to fight back, but I wasn't even prepared for what would happen next when I watched Code Pink anti-war protesters defacing the U.S. Marine Recruiting Center in Berkeley, then barricading the entry and harassing those who attempted to enter. What shocked and saddened me most was to see the Berkeley Police Department officers stand there and do nothing. Well, if they'd had skateboards, you know, maybe it would have been different. They said they were trying to remain neutral. We cannot stand for this insanity any longer, my friends. So she's going to picket in front of the Berkeley Marine recruiting station. But that's okay. Over in the Senate, because God knows we have nothing better to do, Senators Cornyn, a freak from Texas, and Jim Demented, a freak from South Carolina, and Saxby Chambliss, a freak from Georgia. He's the one who made Max Cleland's face morph into that of Osama bin Laden in his filthy political advertising. And Tom Coburn, the doctor from Oklahoma, who swore up and down that there was rampant lesbianism in the junior high schools of southern Oklahoma. That guy. And James Inhofe, also from Oklahoma, the man that Bart Kopp calls Pisquick. And David Vitter, who likes to be put in diapers and kicked around a little bit by ladies of the evening, introduced the Semper Fi Act of 2008. And the bill is meant to punish Berkeley by removing $2 million in hidden earmarks for Berkeley, California in the 2008 Omnibus Appropriations Bill and transfer the funds to the Marine Corps. Because them Marines, they ain't hardly got no money at all. Yes, Congressman John Campbell, California, is introducing a companion bill in the House of Representatives. The American Family Association is all pissed off because one of the earmarks provides $243,000 in taxpayer dollars for the organization Shea Panisse to create gourmet organic school lunches in the Berkeley School District. Them ungrateful little public school children in Berkeley needs to be eating the E. coli mad cow beef that the rest of a red, white, and blue patriotic right-wing little American children is eating and be glad that they're having it. Hallelujah, praise Jesus. Shea Panisse is dedicated to environmental harmony, and their menu features Comté cheese souffle with mâché salad and Mar lemon eclairs with huckleberry coulis. And chicory salad with creamy anchovy vinaigrette and olive toast. Why, the nerve of them little children wanting to eat decent food! If God had wanted them to eat decent food, He wouldn't have made them American children going to the public schools. Sons of bitches. They're going to pull another earmark that spends some money to catalog the papers of Congressman Robert Matsui, who passed away not too long back. Senator Demented said, Berkeley needs to learn that their actions have consequences. Patriotic American taxpayers won't sit quietly while Berkeley insults our brave Marines and tries to run them out of town. Berkeley City Council members have shown complete ingratitude to our military and their families, and the city don't deserve a single dime of special pet project handouts. Sons of bitches. So anyway, this kind of has a little bit of a happy ending, because I just checked in my email, and lo and behold, out of the millions of right-wing hate speak emails that went to the Berkeley City Council, there must be a few of us who took the time to use the right-wing servers of the American Family Association to send a positive message of uplift to the Berkeley City Council. Because Daryl Moore, council member, City of Berkeley, District 2, just dropped a note to me that said, I just wanted to take the time to let you know that your support is very much appreciated in these trying times. It's people like you that give our Berkeley City Council the resolve to take a stand on issues that we feel strongly about, and we our constituency feel strongly about. I hope that we might lead the way for other cities in saying that we will not be complicit in sending our youth off to die in an illegitimate war. Thank you again for the support, and I hope that your words of encouragement help the rest of the Berkeley City Council stay strong. A lot of the time I figure and I feel that there's no way of knowing if we're accomplishing anything here. That sort of tells me that we are. And it kind of makes it all worthwhile. Thanks, everybody. Looking forward to tomorrow night's show when we will have World Watch Institute President Chris Flavin on the program. Talk a little bit about a coal-free West Virginia. Talk a little bit about the state of the world in 2008, the recent publication of the World Watch Institute. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Thanks to all of our news ninjas and chat room moderators. I can never say or do enough for you. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, at whiterosesociety.org. If you value what happens here, you value whiterosesociety.org. And, of course, many thanks to our sponsor, Coal River Mountain Watch, and the hard-working people who make up Coal River Mountain Watch and are earnestly trying to make a difference and encouraging you to be part of the solution. CRMW.net. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 115 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch, and we appreciate their support. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. You are indeed appreciated. Today is Tuesday, February 12th, 2008. So if you're listening on a Tuesday evening, that is February 12, 2008, shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to phone in and talk with myself and to the guest who I'll be introducing in just a minute or two. You'll find the show site at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there are links there to all of the guests, as well as to the guests' audio archives from previous shows in case you've missed one and would like to have a listen. You'll find links there to the chat room, which is active as I speak. And honestly, if you're not participating in the chat room and listening to this network and you have a computer in front of you, which you very likely do if you're listening live, you are missing an aspect of the program that is really very useful, entertaining. All sorts of links are posted in the chat room to topics that come up in the standard banter, which is always side-splitting, and some of the smartest people on the planet are in the Head On Radio Network chat room, and we are pleased to have them there. In addition to the audio archives from the past shows, you're going to find links to the Head On Radio Network main site. That's strictlyconfidentialradio.com. The Head On Radio Network main site is where you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, and the other programs are scheduled 24 hours a day. You'll find links there for the audio, and you'll find links there for the Saturday programming. You'll find all sorts of useful information at headonradionetwork.com. That's headonradionetwork.com. You'll find there also the links to the PayPal button so that you can help support the Head On Radio Network. We are indeed listener-supported, and your contributions help keep the packets passing and the streamers streaming and the CDs spinning and the cassettes rolling along happily inside their little plastic shells. You'll find links there also to Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and you'll find links there to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. The toll-free line for participating is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-443-2366. If you do have unlimited long distance, please use that. You'll save the studio a nickel or a buck, and you'll be helping listener-supported radio. That's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. But we're certainly willing to pick up the freight if you would rather use the toll-free line, which, again, is 877, the number 4, head-on. My email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I do try to check the mail during the breaks. Ah, it is a Tuesday night. Apparently it is the second Tuesday of the month, because just as I was starting the show, Microsoft updates started flowing in, which is always a joy, because you never know what Microsoft updates are going to do. It's a little disconcerting when they pop up in the middle of your just beginning the show. I am delighted to tell you about our guest this evening, who will be joining us shortly. His name is Andrew J. Weaver. That's Reverend Andrew Weaver. He is a Ph.D., and he is a United Methodist Church pastor and a research psychologist who is living in New York City. He's a graduate of the Perkins School of Theology at Southern Methodist University. He's co-authored 14 books, including Counseling on Addictions and Compulsions, Reflections on Grief and the Spiritual Journey, and Connected Spirits, Friends and Spiritual Journeys. Dr. Weaver is as appalled as many of the rest of us are at the prospect of the George Bush Presidential Library, along with a partisan think tank,
being located at Southern Methodist University. Dr. Weaver is the person who's behind the petition to see if we can get this stopped. He's also the go-to man for information about it. Those of you who listen to this show regularly know that this is a constant rant that I am concerned about, having grown up in the Methodist Church, what's going on with the George W. Bush Presidential Library. There is a quote from George Bush: "I'm going to build a fantastic Freedom Institute, an institute that really, you know, just kind of imparts knowledge and deals with big issues." God deliver us from the imbecile. Now, there's a fellow who's signed this, the petition, that is. His name is Michael Fuller. He's a Methodist also. Says he holds an undergraduate and MBA from SMU, and he sent his sons to SMU, and they hold undergraduate degrees. The youngest holds additional masters in math. I have SMU in our family.